Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Not much happening other than the Supreme Court decision in Trump's case that he is right. He has presidential immunity. It's a first. It's a legal precedent because no president before really had to argue this because no president has been persecuted by the misuse of criminal courts. Now, there are presidents who have been persecuted by the misuse of civil courts, which is why there was already a precedent for civil immunity. You cannot sue a president for harm incurred under his tasks as a president. New guy says, no, Biden is persecuted. Well, Biden is starting to be dismissed by his own side, but I wouldn't call this persecution. The Supreme Court has decided that, yes, going forward, there is presidential immunity. And the reason we need this at this point is that the Democrats are too crazy with the legal system. Presidents have been committing crimes forever. How many people did George Bush kill? How many people did Obama kill with drones? Some comedian at some point was pointing out that Obama was the blackest president since drones are like drive-by shootings and it's a black tradition in the U.S. No one has ever pursued the application of the law on these presidential actions. So there had to be some immunity. And the Supreme Court decided that it wasn't absolute immunity, but it's a very large and wide one. So what will be left for the Democrats in the Trump case will be maybe 1% of their allegations. And we'll see if they take those forward and if they try to go in with the case. But certainly the case has lost most of the wind that it had through its sails. Saturn Shine says, trying to outdo each other on what they'll do for other groups. John Drake says, it would be impossible to be the president without this. Exactly. There are just too many laws. Everything that the army does, everything that many agencies do, is a monopoly of force, basically. And if you have a monopoly of force, well, you are using force in a way that your citizen can't. Now, I don't know if in principle, as a libertarian, I don't know if I agree. Perhaps in an ideal libertarian world, the president shouldn't have any more power than any other citizens. Perhaps. It seems that if you wanted to remove violence from the hands of the government, you would have to remove this presidential immunity. Or else the state will continue committing violence. We have a snapping turtle fishing for a little pink fish here. Let's watch this. Apparently the snapping turtle has a worm-shaped part of its tongue that it can use to tease the fish.
Do it!
You can do it! Go ahead! Bite it! You can do it! Patient. I would have snapped already. Oh, there you go. He got it. Yeah, when I was in my PhD days, we were fishing and we were giving electrical shocks at the bottom of the river, and we were looking for these little larvas of lampreys. They are basically that long, and they're like a long worm fish type of structure. And we were getting a lot of them popping out of the sand. But one day we had a snapping turtle just come out of the sand. There was nothing. We were just seeing sand. We give our little shocks that are meant to get our fish out of the sand. And we see the whole ground just... And coming out of it, a giant snapping turtle, much bigger than this one. It was big like this, approximately, like larger than me, larger than my vertical body. Huge snapping turtle, and it totally grabbed the electrical pole of my colleague. And it held it in its snapping beak. We tapped a little bit on its head, but apparently they can snap your finger off. You have to be careful with snapping turtle. Apparently they can totally cut parts of your body. But in our case, we just hit it with a rod and it gave away. It gave up biting our electrical material and then it swam in the other direction. I didn't know that a turtle could live totally under the sand, totally hidden. It must have been hidden there for a while because there was no trace of its presence. New guy says, bad bite, but not strong enough to take a finger. Don't get bit. No, they say that it's definitely strong enough to take a finger. They say you should treat a bit because we didn't know, but after we read about it, and they say you have to behave with a snapping turtle the way you would behave with an alligator. An alligator, apparently. That's how dangerous it is. Yeah, so I read the decision, and there's not much interesting. I mean, it's basic Supreme Court stuff. It boils down to the fact that the president would be intimidated. The president couldn't be accomplishing its purpose without having hesitations or fear of retribution. So it makes sense to give him immunity. Doubting Thomas says, Jeff, I don't believe this ruling has or would have had any effect over the recent guilty verdict for the hush money payment as it occurred before he was president. Yeah, definitely we're not talking about this. We're talking about the January 6th cases. So those cases where it is argued that when President Trump was talking to people and saying, hey, we should make sure that the election isn't getting defrauded. That is the case here. I mean, they attempted to go at him from so many angles, it's hard to keep track of. But that is the case here that was in front of the Supreme Court. Trump says immunity ruling, big win for democracy. The Supreme Court on Monday ruled in a 6-3 vote that former presidents, including Trump, enjoy immunity from criminal prosecution for conduct involving official acts during tenure in office, but is not immune from unofficial acts. So the Supreme Court has let a small door opened. The idea that perhaps if Trump was having a private discussion with private entities, those will not be covered by presidential immunity. But I think that it would be very shameful for the Democrats to pursue just small conversation between private parties as being a whole criminal conspiracy. It removes the sense of importance here. There is a woman who got exposed on whatever podcast for not knowing the meaning of a term she used. Andrew Wilson loves to expose these women. Let's see what she has to say.
Yeah, now I just answered your question. Can you tell me what epistemology means?
Epistemology is the study of the epistles.
I love how for making this error, she had to kind of of change the pronunciation of apostles. She calls them epistles. So epistemology is the philosophy of knowledge. It's the system of justifications and rationalizations around how we build the truth, how we build knowledge. Apostles are the followers of Jesus, but epistles does not exist. And I think she made up that word for the occasion.
Now I just answered your question. Can you tell me what epistemology means?
Epistemology is the study of the epistles. That's the simplest way to say it. I mean, you can give me your definition.
Okay, epistles are a thing, says Big Tech Exodus. I didn't know. So epistles, what are they? The writings of the apostles? Well, I don't know about this word. In any case, it's not epistemology.
But this guy told me that...
I just answered your question. Can you tell me?
The study of the letters of the New Testament. James was aware of something that I wasn't aware. So the epistles are the letters that are shared between members of the church. Big Tech Exodus says an epistle is a writing directed or sent to a person or group of people, usually an elegant and formal didactic letter. So basically the letters of Paul and that kind of stuff, I guess. Mark D's channel says a letter, especially a formal one, synonym letter. The bird flu says the problem with chicks like this, with this level of ego, is that they will double down on the point of absurdity. If epistles is a word, then conceivably there could be an epistemology, or I don't know, something close to epistemology to justify the study of these letters. I wasn't aware. DNC waits early nomination for Biden. Oops, I misclicked. To quash internal party dissent, the DNC is waiting early nomination for Biden. So basically, lock him in so that people stop arguing. Sorry, I was sneezing. Lock him in so that there's not even a possibility that he be kicked out. I don't know if doubling down on a bad path is very clever for the Democrats. Yes, Defenestrator says, lock him up. Epistology would be the name. Lendold Guntram has found what is the name of the science of studying the letters of the epistles. And it is epistology. Aha. So we found what she meant. So she wasn't far from reality then. She just maybe granted that perhaps Andrew Wilson was referring to epistology. DNC waits early nomination for Biden to quash internal party dissent. A potential date for Biden's nomination is July 21st, when the Democratic Convention Credentials Committee meets virtually, according to people familiar with the matter. July 21st is just 3 days after Trump is scheduled to accept his party's nomination at the Republican Convention in Milwaukee. The disparate attempted message from all this narrative shaping is simple. Nothing to see here. Move along. So they don't want uncertainty and questioning when Trump is fully nominated and people are still arguing around Biden. Big Tech Exodus says, I bet it was a lucky guess coincidence. The bird flu says, nah, she flailed upon a technicality when she was outclassed. She did it several times that show. Oh, well, I haven't watched the rest of the show, so I wouldn't know. There's this hilarious moment with Sam Hyde, where he hired 20 Indians. I don't know, maybe that's old, but he hired 20 Indians to stand by his side as he was filming kind of a fake podcast with this troll Jewish guy. It's very hilarious. I love the moment where he says, because I love this country.
Sit there.
I have to sit here.
You have to be in the middle one.
You don't understand.
You can sit close to me, but your mic is there.
I'm a camera left guy. Guys, we're here with Matan. Vinyl flooring. We're here in the cut, here in the fuck house.
Wait, hold on. Wait. Stand there for one sec.
Come in.
Wait. Stand there one second. I'm going to introduce you.
Come in.
No, hold on. Hold on.
You're being a typical Jew right now.
No, I'm not
ordering
Jewish.
Me around, brother.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
You are legit good.
I have a question for you.
I'm not trolling. You're good at what
you do.
I have a question for you.
You're gonna tear it all down.
What's up, bro?
You're gonna so many Indian people.
What's up, Chad?
Sir, you need anything?
No, I'm okay. This is Chad, Mason, Braden, Bradley, Asher, Scott.
Wrong names. Those are just white names.
What?
This is
Tyler. How you doing, man?
That's not Tyler.
Tyler and Taylor, actually. They're brothers.
Tyler and Taylor?
Yeah.
Say that
is
one.
Is Damiel on camera?
He won his face in the camera.
I let you do that.
Gonna got you.
So basically, these 20 Indian guys were paid and were told, just stand around us and this will give the impression that our podcast is popular or something.
Again, I would have got you again.
You don't ever do that to me, Matan.
I would have got you again.
You don't ever. It's about the conversation. Sometimes it's about making people happy. Go ahead.
They're getting aggressive with each other.
Listen, it's tight quarters. It's like a train. It's like an Indian train. They have to get aggressive to make space. You know what I mean? That's just how it be. You can have some bread, yeah, of course. Here, have some cheese and some cranberries. Almond.
But why would you give him money?
And build planes. Because I believed in him. And because I believed in this nation.
But why didn't... Who's clapping?
9! 2 for 99! 2 for 99! 2 for 99! 2 for 99! 2 for 99!
Oh my god. Syria says not funny at all. Well, you know, Sam Hyde is always in that type of humor where there is something good in there. There is something good, but the way he presents things is always it's not normie presentation. It is very hidden. You have to look for it. It's painful. It's not ideal, it's not consumable humor, but there is some unique stuff that you don't get at other places. We have the Haktua girl. She is now doing interviews, and she says that someone has offered $600 to get her spit, to get her saliva. Because now it is considered a lubricant for sex to have the saliva of the Haktua girl.
Like, do creepy guys message you? Is it scary? Are you like, what the fuck did
so
I do?
So the guy that does my hats, he got offered $600 like 3 days ago for me to spit in a jar and sell it. That is revolting. Like,
oh,
that's just
gosh.
Disgusting, is it not?
That's crazy. Like,
I love that these girls are dressed like whores. They are out there yelling into the mic, describing how they do fellations and how they perform oral sex. And the guy who wants to purchase the spit, that's the guy who is disgusting. Like, oh my God, that is so creepy.
Creepy guys message you? Is it scary? Are you like, what the fuck did I...
Oh yes, I'm scared. Very scary.
So the guy that does my hats, he got offered $600 like 3 days ago for me to spit in a jar and sell it.
Well, he has asked you to make the commerce of what you have been up to now giving up for free. So it's like you have documented the quality of your saliva for oral sex. And here he is trying to make an honest purchase of it. But now he's creepy. Well, you were out there displaying your boobs, and she's displaying her own boobs in the interview, and you were all talking about how you suck dick.
That is revolting. Like, oh, that's just disgusting, is it not?
That's crazy.
Elsewhere in the interview, she also explains that it's not true, the rumor that went around that she lost her job, that she was a teacher, and that she lost her job. Not true, apparently. So, yeah, I mean, the Haktua girl is on her mimetic wave. Thai Odyssey says, we developed high definition at precisely the historical moment when Luffy wouldn't made everyone look better. Would have made everyone look better. Luffy, I don't know what that is. But you are right. We are in an era of extreme exposition of details. We have resolution in time and resolution in the social space of people. Tillman says, JF, explain the SCOTUS decision on Chevron. Well, I explained it about two or three shows ago, so you're going to have to go back. But in short, lo-fi. Okay, lo-fi. So low resolution. That's what he meant. Okay. In short, the Chevron deference was a case of a fisherman. There's a law that says the fishermen of herring have to be monitored by an agent of the government. But then there was a family fisherman who was tired, because you have this monitor who has to come on your boat and you have to pay his salary. So you're paying the government employee that's checking you. And yet in the law, there was nothing in the law stating that the government employee had to be paid by the fishing company. The law was just stating there has to be a monitor, but if the government doesn't have the money to pay it, it wasn't saying that the fisherman must pay it. So Chevron deference was the principle that ultimately the agency decides. The agency decides what the law is. If it's not totally written with all details. And now they decide no more. Agencies have no more interpretative power. It is the duty of the courts or the politicians to write their law better. But we can't have bureaucrats decide what the law is. Kyle Rittenhouse is embroiled in an embarrassing family spat as sister and mom make shocking allegation against Kenosha killer shooter. You know, woman, most of the time, except if you have a very, very special woman. But most of the time, the woman in your life will always be the most socially sensitive that will have an issue when you go in the right-wing direction, or when you go like him, you know, basically making a public image of himself as a killer of leftists. that's basically what Kyle Rittenhouse has become now. He is the authority in the U.S. on killing leftists. He's the guy you invite at your conference if you want the expert take on leftist shooting. So basically, when you go that route, there will be tension with normie family members. Females are the most sensitive to this kind of social pressure. But here, I think that the conflict is around the family home. The family of Kenosha killer Kyle Rittenhouse claimed he has abandoned them and left them facing eviction while he cashes in on notoriety. he has become an icon of the right-wing media circuit. Okay. But our family has been through unimaginable hardships, and now we find ourselves on the brink of losing everything. Rittenhouse is thought to have moved to a plush gated community in Houston after taking up a job as outreach director for Second Amendment lobby group Texas Gun Rights and launching his media career, but he found himself driven offstage by Black Lives Matter protests in some conference at the University of Memphis, blah, blah, blah. But his mother and sister, who supported him throughout his murder trial, left their home in Antioch, Illinois, in its aftermath, moving to a small apartment in Kissimmee, Florida, where they claim they are now just days away from eviction. Our lives were shattered when my brother was involved in a tragic shooting incident. The aftermath of this event uprooted our family's stability and left us grappling with grief, trauma, and the harsh reality of starting over. Okay. With my brother's unwillingness to provide support or contribute to our family, we've been left to navigate this journey on our own. To make matters worse, I lost my job due to frequent hospitalizations due to medical issue. I have been unable to work over the last 4 months, making it extremely difficult to provide. Faith, 23, accompanied her appeal with a photo of herself lying in a hospitalized bed attached to a blood monitor. We've fallen behind on rent and now we're facing eviction with only 8 days left in our apartment. The thought of losing our home, our sanctuary in the midst of chaos, is overwhelming and terrifying. Their fundraise that had a $3,000 target has been surpassed as of Friday evening with $3,800 raised from 67 donations. I don't think that a brother is bound to take care of a mother and a sister. Too bad, but I don't think they are. And so if you go in bankruptcy as a mother and sister, you just try to figure out a way to live. Kyle Rittenhouse is probably not massively rich, you know, he's probably not multimillionaire to the point of being able to just say, here, I'm paying your whole house. So he's probably living at the limit himself, especially if he went into a high-priced home and he has some mortgage payment, maybe. He is embroiled probably in a set of obligations of his own. Orkin Man says, gated community is expensive, though. Yeah, exactly. So, ultimately, a brother, if he has much surplus, could take care of them. But if he doesn't have much surplus, sorry, you just go on the street and then you declare bankruptcy and try to start over. But Kyle Rittenhouse cannot be held responsible for the situation you're in with the apartment you've chosen at the price that you've chosen. It's not a case where Kyle Rittenhouse is soliciting anything from these women anyway. Like, if it's your girlfriend, then your girlfriend has a use for you. You have a duty toward your girlfriend of care and provider. But a sister and a mother, unfortunately, I don't think that there is an obligation for Kyle Rittenhouse here to do anything, especially beyond his means. Defenestrator says they got normie squeezed. Yeah, exactly. That is our dear good old normie squeeze happening to the family of Kyle Rittenhouse. Isn't that fascinating? There may be more of this. A shame on Jordan Peterson. Shame on Jordan Peterson for telling Cenk Uygur to try to read some Solzhenitsyn. And then maybe rethinking your whole political orientation. Shame on Jordan Peterson, because you failed yourself at, you know, the reading of a book of Solzhenitsyn is still this very tense situation that Jordan Peterson refuses to comment on one of the book of Solzhenitsyn, which tells the story of life between the ethnic Russians and the Jews under Soviet oppression, basically. Under the Soviet oppression of the gulags, and people will remember this led to, yes, the book is called 200 Years Together, and this led to the famous, I can't do it.
And the book by Solzhenitsyn I'd like to get to.
Thank you.
It's 200 Years Together. Last year a couple started translating it into English and they put it online. I included all the chapters that they translated so far. As a Jewish American, I think this book is very important for everyone to read. In the book, Solzhenitsyn documents the overrepresentation of Jewish individuals in the NKVD and in Bolshevik leadership. He claims that the ethnic hatred these individuals had for Christians played a role in the Hollow Gomar. Jewish individuals had faced persecution in Ukraine prior to the Bolsheviks' rise to power. These individuals exacted their revenge on the Christian Ukrainian population. The result was the death of 4 million Christians. The line of good and evil cuts through the heart of every human. One cannot simply say a given ethnic group is evil. Every individual must struggle with the good and the evil in their own hearts. That being said, it is important to understand what motivates groups to commit atrocities against other groups, because the previous century has been filled with groups killing other groups. Like the Bolsheviks, Jewish individuals are overrepresented in the ownership and senior staffing.
So basically, the guy is framing the hypothesis. If the Jews have led to the killing of Christians in the Holodomor, don't you think that it could happen again? Since they are placed in such positions of technocratic power, since the same hatred may one day motivate their actions, if it happened before, why shouldn't we protect ourselves against this and expect that this could happen? And to this, Jordan Peterson said, what is your comment, Jordan? And he said, I can't do it. Which he was probably referring to his rules for life, which is, don't tell a lie. You know, tell the truth. Or if you can't tell the truth, at least try not to lie. So I can't do it was probably him saying, I cannot speak right now, because if I speak, it will have to be a lie, and I don't want to lie. And so let me just escape the question as a whole by saying, I can't do it. So that way, at least I'm not lying. Chuck Garrity says he's doing an excellent job getting his points across. The guy in the crowd was very good, yes. Rodi Lassid says the NKVD are like the Gestapo, but for Russia, the secret police, where Jews were overrepresented. Yes, I believe so. The Great Exodus continues. Fresh IRS data shows Illinois loses residents to 40 other states. There is an exodus from many leftist places. The latest state-to-state migration numbers, Illinois is bleeding people. 75,000 people moved into Illinois, and 262,000 moved out of Illinois. That loss was the third largest in the country, with only California and New York netting bigger losses of residents. Not only did Illinois lose a net 87,000 residents, but the state also lost the incomes those residents took with them. Illinois gave up a net $9.8 billion in adjusted gross incomes with outgoing residents, taking with them more than $19.3 billion in AGI. In all, Illinois lost residents on net to 40 states, giving up a total of 87,000 residents, while it netted a tiny gain of 632 residents from seven states. And so where are people fleeing? They are fleeing into this column here or toward Texas and Florida. I don't feel that Texas and Florida are good destinations. They are temporarily okay because somehow they still manage to remain right-wing. But there's just too much exodus and too much overpopulation. These places will one day turn leftist too. There's not much places to flee to. Defenestrator says, I think it should be Illinois. Illinois is how we would say in French, but I don't think that's how the Americans say it. Lendold Guntram says, barely for a couple of years, maximally few decades. Yes, I don't think Texas and Florida are surviving the current massive demographic movements. It's just too obvious. Arizona is in the same situation because it's so much the destination for leftists that are fleeing. They're leftist places, but because they are fleeing doesn't make them right-wingers. It just makes them rationally acting leftist. They will soon be filled with more leftists these days. And as a last news item, Steve Bannon has surrendered to prison for a contempt sentence. Steve Bannon on July 1st reported to a federal prison in Connecticut to begin a four-month sentence for a contempt of Congress conviction. So he was called by Congress to testify. I think it was in relation to the January 6th events. And when Congress does this, apparently you have to show up. And he proudly refused to show up and said, you can't invite me, I'm going to resist. And so now he gets punished 4 months of prison. I think he kind of chose to be a martyr here. I think he was okay taking in the 4 months. And yes, there will be, in 5 minutes from now, Biden will be addressing the Supreme Court ruling about the presidential immunity. And people were thinking that I used hippie colors on Trump. Those are not hippie colors. Those are Mario Kart, Mario 64, invincibility colors for Mario. That is what the thumbnail was meant to represent. So if you want to watch what Biden has to say, I think there is an address to the nation in 5 minutes from now, should be live on YouTube. I didn't have much to cover tonight, so it will be a short show. We can head toward the Biden announcement. I don't think it's going to be particularly important, though. That is it for tonight. Nicholas Petris, I agree with this. Reclaim the rainbow. Because the rainbow is a product of nature, and those are colors of joy, and it was totally hijacked by LGBT activism. Even the word gay, yes, King Anus, well, King Anus, that's, you have a weird name to be claiming you want to reclaim gay. You know, you may have been reclaiming it for yourself already with such a name. But yes, I would agree that the word gay, meant joyful. And rainbows meant joyful also. It meant joy and luck, and it got somehow totally hijacked by a sexual movement. Dino Legovic says, rainbows belong to little kids, not sexually confused, narcissistic, exhibitionist adults. Yeah, I think there could be a future where we do this. I think the use of the LGBT colors and flag has peaked. I think I'm already seeing it this Pride Month, because we're in Pride Month right now. Or maybe we were, and it's over now, today. But we were definitely in Pride Month, and I haven't been annoyed by much, let me tell you. Of course, there was the social media where one of the images going around the social media is they were pissing on each other right in the street, and they were making sexual acts just in public, and there was a guy in a pool of pee, and it was disgusting. But the PR here is weakening. We can already see a weakening of the LGBT PR. And it's kind of annoying to people to the maximum. And I remember the gay pride stuff of 4 or 5 years ago, when all corporations would cover their stuff in LGBT flag. It's over now. They don't do it anymore. There's been too much you go woke, you go broke. So I think that in the future, we will have perhaps the best timing to reclaim the rainbow, maybe in 10, 20 years, when they've been down and down and down, and their cities suck, and their gay pride parade are ugly. Like, they're going down, and it will be the right moment to take the rainbow back.
Thank you.